Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And I feel kind of rude, Bill. A lot of times we have guests in the studio and we chat them up.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to waste material.
No. And we're outnumbered by a lot. There's a lot of people in the studio right now.
You're damn right.
The cast of Superior Donuts, which is making its season premiere tonight over on CBS. That's an 8 o'clock start. That takes place. And at the same time, you guys are in town at Zany's, right?
Yeah, we are.
At the exact same time?
We're performing tonight.
No, we're on Zany's at 8:30.
Are you just going to watch the
show? Premieres at 8, right?
Yeah.
So what people got to do is they got to bring their phones and they got to watch the show on their phone.
While we're doing
CBS
our sets.
All access?
And then you see us.
While we're doing our sets.
Everyone's got a TiVo these days.
Let me introduce you guys separately. Maz Jobrani, Jermaine Fowler, David Koechner, and Rel Battle. Like I said, the cast of Superior Donuts. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you for having
us, guys.
Jermaine Fowler. I've changed
Fowler.
He changed it in the last half hour.
Yeah. It was time.
It's more exotic sounding.
Sexy. I like it.
It gives you, it's sexier.
Like
it
Robert
Goulet.
Mine's Kochner.
Oh, you also changed your name.
Yeah, that's what people think it is anyway.
I'll go with Jobrani. What do you do with Rel Battle?
I like Rel Battle, actually.
How about Orale Battle?
Orale Battle.
Orale Battle.
Real Beezy.
That sounds good.
That's my rap name, actually, Rel Battle. My real name is Arnold.
Oh, it is?
No, I'm joking.
You guys, are you sick of each other yet?
No.
Yeah.
Not yet.
No.
Is it a no? Rel really said yes. No. It's a no. It's a big no.
No,
we get to work together at a place with other wonderful people, Judd Hirsch, Katie Sagal, Diane Guerrero, and there's food there all day.
All day.
And if we are not working together and having fun, they go into your room. We'll come get you. So you get to go into your room and you nap.
And with us four on the road, we're comedians. We're a different brand of people anyway. So we're the weirdos who kind of understand what it's like to be weird.
Yeah. And like, it's funny. Like, a lot of us aren't morning people. So like, it's easy to wake up and be cranky and just mean and not want to talk to people. But like, we're all tired. We've been working all morning.
Sure. What time did you get up this morning?
5-ish or whatever.
It was still 45. Dark out.
Yeah. We give our publicist a little bit of heat
grief.
once in a while. Shauna over there.
We're very appreciative and like we love each other's company.
She keeps us going.
Sometimes
man.
She calls my phone and tells me to come downstairs. I just look at the number ring.
Yeah. We have a driver. We have a driver who's been like one of the worst drivers we ever had. I've ever had in my life.
He listens right now. We're gonna crash the car because you're
not
talking.
By the way, just so people don't think we're spoiled, it's not like we're unappreciative.
Sure.
That we have a driver, but this guy is lost.
Oh.
I'm gonna get an Uber home because he ain't crashing me.
we came back from ManCow, right? Yeah. We did an interview there.
I'm sorry.
Exactly. And we went downstairs, and usually your driver's waiting out front in the front door. The door's already open. It's warm inside. We go outside. The door is locked. He's not even inside the car. And we're like, well, I guess he's not inside. And finds out he's just at Starbucks and didn't even tell anybody.
Smoking a
cigarette, something like that.
Y'all back already?
And he comes back. He didn't say sorry. He just said, oh, here we go. And he goes back in the car, lets us in, and then...
Wait a minute. I just had some. What if he's listening to this interview?
That's what I'm just saying.
And we go outside. The car's not even there anymore.
He's not going to be there.
Well, screw them, man.
At least you get a new driver.
Yeah.
Sean, we need to set that up because he's probably mad.
He is mad right now.
See, people don't think TV stars have problems. You guys have proved once and for all.
We got
TV
our
stars
issues.
Have the same problems we all have.
He asked Dave for directions.
He asked
talent for directions. He said, you're from Chicago. Where are we going? He said that to the talent.
Did you tell him, Dave?
I did. I don't remember. It's been 20 years since I lived here. So,
So things have changed a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Especially uptown.
What have you noticed? What's changed?
Well, Wrigleyville is just completely changed.
Yeah,
that whole area is.
It's like an amusement park.
Literally knocked the buildings down.
Yep.
Except put all. Yeah, that's much different.
The Ricketts family bought everything around Wrigley and have made it Ricketsville. It's all their stuff.
What was it before? Was it Hood or was it like
Potterville?
It looked like Potterville from It's a Wonderful Life.
No, you had multiple different mom and pop places.
Yeah,
and a lot of apartments.
Yum Donuts is gone.
Taco Bell's gone.
Taco Bell is gone.
They got rid of a corporation?
Yes.
They gentrified a corporation?
Yes. That's how powerful they are.
That's hilarious.
You win a World Series, you get carte blanche. Do whatever you want.
Oh, that's going.
Everybody's Taco happy. Bell's out of here.
What is it, Whole Foods? Is it Whole Foods now?
There is no Whole Foods.
They gentrified the Whole Foods?
Yeah. Well, that didn't exist. You wouldn't recognize it.
No,
it's been
it's
gone
much
for any length of time.
And like that, the traffic's gotten worse.
Yes.
Really bad. Yeah.
Yep, yep. Talk about the Chicago ties to the show, to Superior Donuts, because it kind of got its genesis.
Yes, it did. It's based on a play from Tracy Letts from the mid-2000s. It started maybe at Mary Archie when they started workshopping it. Then it went to Steppenwolf, and then had a Broadway run. And so for years, they've been trying to develop it as a sitcom. And then so Tracy Letts met with a couple of producers who met with some sitcom writers who finally were able to turn it into a successful mega hit that it is now.
That was so subtle and so beautiful. When they did it here on stage, I think it's Michael McKean who played the Judd Hirsch role, right?
Yes, and he think he took it to Broadway as well.
Yeah,
and he's right there. Look,
he's outside.
Why am I not in it?
I describe it as Cheers in a donut shop.
That's pretty good.
But add on to that that our episodes deal with social issues and things of the day.
Yeah.
So it's kind of Cheers with in a donut shop with a conscience.
Cheers more black people.
Two more black people.
Did Cheers have any black people?
They had probably a key grip.
They had John the janitor. He was an extra that was in every scene.
Well, it's Boston, so
not Roxbury, Boston. Yeah.
Some of the writers in the show are from Boston. Chicago, and I got Boston in my head.
They're
from
black.
Chicago.
I count.
They're from Chi-Town, so we always make sure, you know, if we have any guest stars available, like spots in the show. They always like, hey, who do you know from Second City?
Yeah.
We might be in L.A. or we can fly out to do some, you know, do a guest star role in the show. Dave Pasquazi from Veep.
Oh, he's so good.
Oh my. Dude,
isn't he?
Yeah, he's great.
I would say in our show, for the first 13 episodes, at least in 10 of them, we would have small guest stars and large ones too, but there was always someone from Second City working.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And a lot of them I didn't know. They just, hey, by the way, I was also from Second City, so that's fun. Yeah.
Different generations of Second City folks.
Yeah. To give it more of a Chicago flavor, I guess.
Well,
right?
I think it's familiar, and it just so happens that... we do have three writers on the show that are from Chicago, and that might have something to do with it, including the casting.
It has a lot to do with it.
Did it?
Yeah. Tracy Letts, who is also an actor, I guess most people would know him maybe from Homeland, probably.
Probably,
right?
or his most famous play, I think, is August Osage County.
Yeah.
He won the Tony, I believe, for that.
He can write some very multi-leveled, very, very dark things if he wants to, can't he?
Yeah.
I like that about him.
Although, you know, he does not run the show, and it was just the source material, so he's... I wonder how many people come up to him every week. I'm watching your show.
Yeah. And he's come by a table read.
Has he?
Yeah, we met him.
Pilot,
great guy.
For the pilot. Good dude.
What does he say when he sees what you guys are putting out? What does he say?
He likes it, man. He just came by to give us his blessing and also, like, you know, just to tell us, you know, what his two cents are for, like, the, you know, the circuitry of the show and what just worked out for him in the play and what we could, you know, borrow.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. So
some of his work might not translate. Like, Killer Joe might not make for a great sitcom.
Right.
Nah. Probably not a great sitcom.
And Superior Donuts, who had the debt? Was it Franco?
Yeah, Franco had the debt.
He had the debt, and he got beat up real bad. Ended up in the hospital.
Yeah,
might be too heavy for multicam.
Yeah,
you know, but the source material was ripe for a TV show.
Well, I think what they took from the play was the heart, because in the end, you know, in the play, the Arthur character, the Judd Hirsch character, comes and helps the Franco character, as does the Russian guy next door that turned into a Middle Eastern guy now. So, but basically, what I'm saying is, it was a play. It was a nice play where. It's got heart. So I think they've taken that and they've put that into the show. So a lot of times you have great scenes between Jermaine here and Judd where they're having emotional toe-to-toe.
Yeah.
And then we kind of sprinkle in some flavor.
Show's got a lot of range, gang.
Yeah.
Some people say it's a cultural barometer.
People have said that.
Yeah.
A cultural barometer.
Everyone said that. Everyone has said it.
I got a tattoo on the spine of my back.
The show is Superior Donuts. It's premiering tonight on CBS. Season 2 is. That's an 8 o'clock start. Or go see the guys at Zanies in Chicago tonight. Zanies.com has all your ticket information. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
The cast of Superior Donuts with us in the studio. Jermaine Fowler, David Koechner, Maz Debrani, Rel Battle. And tonight is the premiere of Season 2. Congrats on that.
Thank you so much.
Channel 2, CBS, 8 p.m. And then a live show begins 8:30 at Zanies in Chicago. Tickets still available for this?
No, we sold out, baby.
I bet you did.
Sold out, but I have some. I'm selling some outside.
Some black market.
Are you? Maz,
are you?
I'm scalping. Turns out Maz bought 20.
I bought 20 right out the gate, man.
No, Maz.
There's no Groupon for it or anything?
No.
be cool if like people could watch our show at 8 and then rush over, you know, to the show. Maybe is that
right?
Does
you
that
could
work?
Do both.
There are no other shows tonight with us.
Why didn't you start it at 8 and have a little viewing party with everyone?
We thought about
that's
that.
What we should do, but we're that. Tired. We need to sleep after all the indictments we handed out today.
Yeah, they got Koechner. They got Koechner.
Oh no, Dave!
But I won't turn myself.
No,
in.
You can't.
Yeah, he's
well,
here.
We'll not go lightly.
Oh, you're starting an indictment too. Wow.
Indictment too, yeah.
You are working.
Off the air, I said David Koechner was great as one of the detectives Fusco in Twin Peaks.
Fusco
and
Brothers.
Your friends didn't even know that you were on that.
Well,
we don't support Dave very much outside of donuts, you know. No, I didn't know, man.
I was done with it before we even shot the pilot, and then it took a year and a half for it to come out, or a full, yeah, no, year and 4 months for it to come out. So you almost forget that it's going to be on. Yeah.
Were you a Twin Peaks fan?
A little bit. Certainly, David Lynch fan.
Yeah.
So that was a really cool experience.
It's a funny movie. I saw the movie a while back. It's funny. Like, it's just underrated to me. It's just kind of got these elements to it, these really Midwest elements to it that make me laugh. Reminds me of Maryland a little bit.
The movie was called Fire Walk With Me, right?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, I think so. Twin Peaks Fire Walk
With Me.
Is that
the one with they had the guy, the dead body photographer crying during the... No, that wasn't it then. I saw the
Jermaine was high when he watched this movie.
No, it was an hour and a half movie. Ah, screw it. Never mind.
Are you thinking of Nightcrawler?
No, I'm thinking about Twin Peaks. Thinking about Twin Peaks, yeah.
Could be.
It wasn't funny.
It was hilarious.
I mean, funny when it's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Wait, like a here's the barometer. Was Saving Private Ryan kind of funny?
Hilarious.
Nah.
Hilarious movie.
Schindler's List. Was
that was funny?
Yeah, Schindler's
List. Like, oh, Color Purple hilarity.
That was
just saying.
That was funny. That was funny. Sophie's Choice was kind of funny.
That was a good one. That was hilarious. That's a
what's Richard Pryor now?
Yeah. He was in it. Boz, the first time I met you, and now this would be 9 or 10 years ago, you were part of the Axis of Evil comedy tour. I went to see you guys perform. At the Old Vic.
Yes.
And what a show that was.
Yeah, I remember that.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. We came through town. The Axis of Evil Comedy Tour was kind of like, Kings of Comedy, or what was the other one? What was it?
Comedians of Comedy?
No, what was it?
Million Dollar Quartet?
The Blue Collar Comedy Tour.
Like the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, but it was Middle Easterners.
Yeah.
And we were touring, in 2007. And we were just talking about that today, actually. It's crazy because you do that. That was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then people like that came out on Comedy Central. And then to this day, like people still come up to me sometimes and they'll be like, yeah, man, I've seen your stand up. And they'll quote that.
Really?
Which is nice.
Yeah.
But I'm like,
you
should come to like a newer show.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you get, you know, it's like old stuff you haven't done.
But you saw it on Netflix. Why didn't you keep going through your queue and watch my other three?
I'm like, oh, I need you.
Suspicious.
But you guys were breaking down stereotypes at a very, very important time to break down stereotypes.
Yeah, it was just, you know what it was we were just comedians that happened to be from that part of the world, and we got together, and it was there was a lot of issues to talk about, and I would say now there's even more issues to talk about. I mean, I'm Iranian, I these guys have seen it on stage. I start the show by saying, you know, 40 years ago when I came to America, nobody liked Iran.
Yeah,
and still nobody likes Iran. It's like
it's tough progress.
That's tough sledding.
It's tough sledding, man. And like I was like, we've been in every travel ban. We've been travel ban 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. Every 6 months, there's a new travel ban.
Yeah,
and we continue to be in them. But so I think that it's important to have people from all backgrounds doing comedy in the sort, because then it humanizes you.
Yep. Right.
So whether it's shows like, you know, you got Master of None now that Aziz Ansari is doing, or The Big Sick, I just watched that Kumail Nanjiani's movie. Mm-hmm. It's good to have people from that part of the world, given the anti-immigrant sentiment we have in America right now, for people to maybe stumble upon some of these projects and be like, oh, that's kind of a, those guys are
just like me.
Just like me. And in this show, actually, in Superior Donuts, I play an Iraqi immigrant.
That a stretch for you?
I just have to make an accent like this, and I talk like this. And nobody on set knows what that accent is, so I just do it.
That's good enough.
Sounds different. Yeah, he sounds like he knows what he's talking about. He's from the country next to it, so he must know. But no, what's fun about it is actually my character is kind of like Carla from Cheers or from Danny DeVito from Taxi. I say a lot of like inappropriate stuff.
Yeah,
I'm a big time capitalist. I play a guy who loves Trump, and he's from Iraq. But what's fun about it is that they give me a lot of funny lines to say. So I always light up when, like on Twitter, the night of, people are like, oh, that was fun that you said this and that. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I'm thinking, okay, they're watching a Middle Easterner and they're laughing. And that's a good thing,
sure.
I think, you know?
Yeah. Jermaine, what's the difference between season one of Superior Donuts and season two of Superior Donuts?
Oh, man. Season one, I always tell people, this is just an introduction to like what we could do. Yeah. And number two, you okay?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Is that wrong?
Sorry.
Man.
No one knows how to do the Heimlich, so you're on your own here.
I guess season two, we just expanded on what we did so well about season one. You know what I mean? It's just we have so many people from different points of views and backgrounds, and we all think differently. We all say things that, you know, we all might not agree with, but like, honestly, we opened up everybody's backstories and let people know why they think and say the things they do.
Yeah. Don't you think, guys, that just the fact that there is a season two says you're doing something right? I mean, they try a lot of things, but the mere fact that you're here for a second season says you're guiding the right way.
It's true. I mean, just to think about what it takes to get a show on the air in the first place, and then when you're lucky enough to be cast in it, and it's still going, and you get to season two, and you're like, oh, we have to wait, work past 2 o'clock today? Oh, you know, you got to realize how fortunate you are. But yeah, it gives it a chance to really, you know, dig deeper. Like the first season, you really don't overwhelm the audience. You're trying to get them to buy into the primary relationship between Arthur and Franco, and then they're able to expand it. And I think they've done a great job this year of putting everybody into the storyline. Sometimes you felt like you're outside the storyline and you're commenting on what's going on, but this year everyone's really integrated into all the storylines. It's fun.
And it's really hard just to even have a comedy show on network television at all. Like, there are very few. This isn't in the 90s.
Yeah.
There are very few, so for us to be able to come back, it's a testament to we're doing a pretty good job, I think.
What'd you guys learn from Judd Hirsch?
Everything, man.
Yeah, he's a
consummate
great,
professional.
He? Yeah.
This guy's been doing theater since the 60s. You know, he always has nose for us. I mean, he makes every line we might think, like, what's that line about?
Katie had the best thing ever. She said,
I'm done.
what Katie say? No. Katie, Judd was talking to Scott Ellis. He's a Broadway a theater director, and he came in to do an episode for us. And Scott directed as if he was doing a Broadway play.
Yeah.
Never done that before. Different experience for me. I felt like I was actually really acting. I felt good. So Judd had a gripe. You know, just a disapproval about a certain line and just a blocking and of one of the scenes we were doing. And he talked to Scott about it, and them two were talking about it. And me and Katie were just watching him talk to Scott. 40 years of experience doing this. And Katie goes, wow, you know what? Judd, out of everyone in this whole lot, has the most experience doing these multicam sitcoms.
Yeah.
People should just shut up and just listen to him. It's the truth. He's always right, though. But he speaks in his own little language. It's so funny. You know what I mean? But he's always right about everything he says.
Something happened, too, that I heard, SEAL Team, or that's the name of the show, right?
Yeah.
SEAL Team is right next to us, the stage next to us. And quite often, that's a big show, and they got a lot of external
huge
shots
production.
And stuff. So they'll close down the regular way for us to get to our parking spots, and we got to go around. And supposedly they had closed it down, and Judd pulled up, and the guy was like, you got to go around. He pulled his window, and he goes, I'm Judd Hirsch. And they made way, and he went right through.
And he dropped the mic, and he drove off.
Nice, nice.
Judd Hirsch.
The man is he's fantastic.
I bet.
Man.
All right, so are you hitting the road just today in Chicago? Or are you on tour all over the
place?
This is the last
stop till L.A., actually.
Yeah. Perfect. We did New York, Philly, D.C., now we're in Chicago.
Yeah, we did all the major markets, but if we third season, I want to do Denver and Austin.
Yeah.
And
maybe,
you know,
over 2 weeks.
2 weeks? Yeah, yeah.
So we don't have to get up at 5 every day.
that span, yeah.
Spread it out a little bit. We're up and on the road every day.
Congrats, you guys.
Thank
awesome.
Thanks
for having us.
Superior Donuts is on tonight. Season 2 premiere tonight at 8 o'clock on CBS. But go see the guys live. Go see Jermaine Fowler, Dave Koechner, Maz Kobrani, and Rel Battle if you have tickets. If not, wait out front. Be patient. Something will happen. They're at Zany's.
Yeah. If you don't have tickets, you know, watch Superior Donuts tonight at 8 p.m.
Yeah, that'll work. Thanks, guys. Good luck to all of
you.
A quick break, then some news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Steve, thank you so much. It is Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. And Country Financial has put together a new program called Journey to Success, where they highlight and feature nonprofit organizations. And today we're going to focus on Chicago Commons. In the studio with us, Andrew Krugli, who is Vice President of Education and Program Operations for Chicago Commons. Thanks for coming in, Andrew.
Thanks for having me here.
First and foremost, I know that Chicago Commons has been around for quite a long time, over 100 years,
yes,
right?
Yes, 123 years old.
And you've been with them since the beginning, Andrew?
Yes, I have.
Wow.
I'm significantly younger. Oh, I look younger than
And give us the premise of Chicago Commons. What do we need to know about it?
Chicago Commons is a non-for-profit. We work with the most at-risk families. We want to avoid isolation and separation. Excuse me. And we have two main functions. One is there's a senior service program. We do adult daycare and in-home care. There's a vice president in charge of all that. And then we do early education and family engagement, which is what my division is. We have Head Start programs and early Head Start programs. We take children as early as 6 weeks old, and we hope to get them as ready for kindergarten as their more advantaged peer groups.
You know, it's interesting that you're talking about helping young children and older seniors, because it's like the young mind and the old mind has to be challenged, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, it's really neat when we bring them together for activities.
I bet that's so cute. It really is.
The seniors really enjoyed coming into our child care schools and participating. They did a clay activity, and they were working together to build things. And it was really a neat thing to see.
Explain a little bit, Andrew, if you wouldn't mind, about that process of getting ready for kindergarten. What exactly goes into that?
Sure. Well, brain development starts, you know, at the moment you're born, and 85% of your brain is actually formed between 0 and 3.
Yeah.
And so that's a time where we need to capitalize on, not wait till they're 5 when all those synapses and neurons are already firing and functioning. But to really catch those kids early so that we can get them to be thinkers and to answer questions and to come into kindergarten excited about learning, not have kindergarten be their first learning experience, because learning begins at birth.
Yeah.
You know, I think back upon this, and I had told you off the air, I never went to preschool. They didn't have preschool when we were growing up, Bill. And I don't know if it has something to do with there were a lot more stay-at-home moms back then who would talk to their kids and read to their kids and teach their kids colors and numbers. And then all of a sudden you had like a two-working parent household, so you needed to get the kid somewhere, and it turns out to be very beneficial. 0 to 3 years is where they do all their learning.
0 to 3, 85% of your brain is formed. And
that's when I worked hardest. Now I have teenagers, so yeah. I guess I've done my job.
Well, the thing about that is that we're working with a lot of families that are in poverty, and so because we're working with families in poverty and at risk, some of these families and parents are working 2 and 3 jobs just to put a meal on the table. And so they don't have the time to read to their kids or to do numbers and colors. And so one of the things that we know is that talking to kids, interacting with kids, language modeling, the feedback that we give to kids, the questions that we ask kids, helps them form their brains and their thinking skills. And so that's what early education is about. One of the things that I really stand on is that early childhood education is not babysitting or daycare. Early childhood education is the beginning of school.
Mm-hmm. All right. So now we know what you do with the young kids, with the little kids. Take us to the other side of the spectrum. What are you doing with the seniors?
So I don't run that senior program, but what we do is we have at-home daycare where we have at-home care, where we have healthcare workers come into the home and provide medicine or companionship. Mm-hmm. We also bring our seniors to one of our sites in Bronzeville for adult daycare and mm-hmm. for activities for seniors.
Yeah, good.
Keep them busy and excited all day.
Yep.
And then we have had them come to our early childhood schools and work together with our kids.
You mentioned the curriculum. You kind of oversee choosing the curriculum for this program, correct?
So the curriculum that we use is actually the city curriculum called Creative Curriculum. That's just a packaged kit. What's special about Chicago Commons is that we are Reggio Emilia inspired. And Reggio Emilia is a small little town in Italy, and where early childhood was born.
Really?
And, yeah, and it's also where Parmesan comes from.
Oh.
I was there in March.
Thank you.
And the philosophy behind Reggio Emilia is that children can lead their own learning and that teachers and caregivers are part of that learning process, but the children are not empty blank slates, that they come to the table with a great deal of knowledge, a great deal of experience. And so one of our philosophies is we let the children lead their own learning studies. In one of our classrooms about a month ago, the children were interested in robotics and parents came in and helped because parents are very much involved in our education program. And these kids built a robot in the classroom.
That's impressive.
Four. This was a four-year-old classroom.
Wow.
They built a robot.
So the curriculum is kind of Montessori, but not exactly Montessori.
Not exactly Montessori. I would say it's Montessori-like, yeah. But we really refer to ourselves as Reggio Emilia-inspired. Mm-hmm. And the schools in Reggio Emilia, especially because they don't have to deal with DCFS and licensing rules and regs, are just amazing places to visit. The things that they can do there that we can't are pretty cool. But one of the things, we have studios in our schools, which in Italy they're called ateliers. And when I first got to Chicago Commons, I walked in. I'm like, you can't have these things in a preschool. There are saws and hammers and real tools for our kids because we believe that the children can do, not that they can't.
Yeah.
And so that they come to us capable and ready and that they speak 100 languages. And the language of art, the language of clay, the language of dance, the language of movement. And we want to bring all those languages out in our kids.
And think about it. When you're 4 years old, I wouldn't let my kids play with a hammer or something because I'd be scared they'd hit themselves. But I'll bet you they could have. And all the different things they're exposed to, it gives them some kind of purpose and some kind of determining factor to decide what they want to do with themselves.
Absolutely. And we try and bring in as much natural material as we can for kids to explore with. So in our classrooms, you won't see plastics or Fisher Price or games that are ready made and store bought. You'll see pine cones and pumpkins and leaves and things that kids have brought into the classroom that they want to learn with and explore.
And it all smells like Parmesan.
And how it all smells like Parmesan.
That's amazing.
Andrew Krugli in the studio with us, Vice President of Education and Program Operations for Chicago Commons. Of course, we mentioned this is a nonprofit organization, so of course they have a fundraiser because they need your support. So tell us about Friday, November 3rd, this coming Friday already.
This Friday at 7:30 at London House is our fundraiser, Pour Out Your Heart. And it is a wine event, wine tasting, music, dancing, and just a great party where you get to drink a lot of wine and have a lot of fun. And it's only $100 if you purchase prior to the event. At the door, it'll be $175. And all of those proceeds will go to support our programs with our children and our families.
And you're doing something right if you've been around for 123 years.
I hope so.
ChicagoCommons.org.
ChicagoCommons.org, and you can purchase a ticket for our fundraiser on that website.
And anyone who's listening who may need to use Chicago Commons or wants to find out more about it, there's information there as well?
There is. We're constantly enrolling children, 0 to 5. We still have some empty slots, especially in our 3, 4, and 5-year-old programs right now. And you can go to ChicagoCommons.org and fill out a form, and someone will get in touch with you immediately and get your child enrolled in one of our programs.
Congratulations on your success and great work you're doing.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Andrew Krugli, Vice President of Education and Program Operations for Chicago Commons, which is part of Country Financial's Journey to Success program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Can I just tell you, our last guest, Andrew Krugli of Chicago Commons, was talking about this Reggio Emilia way of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have asked him this on the air. But it was a small community in a small neighborhood in Italy where the dads all went to fight in the war and the moms didn't like how the school was teaching their children. So they came up with this way and taught these kids. And this particular area, Reggio Emilia in Italy, is a very high crime area. You know why?
Why is this?
They steal the cheese.
Well, we just learned it's the home of Parmesan cheese, right?
But not just Parmesan.
They steal all kinds of cheese?
Parmigiano Reggiano. And I don't know if you've ever seen this. If you go to Mariano's or the Jewel and there's a wheel of it, it's like $100 an ounce. It's not that high. But it's like a little tiny...
A wheel of cheese.
A little square of the wheel cut off is probably about $20.
What? What are they doing to it to is, make it so expensive? It's just
it's
that
Parmigiano
delicious?
Reggiano. It is it got such a mild, wonderful flavor, and it's the best Parmesan cheese. And they
good
were,
enough to steal,
yeah,
Wendy.
Yeah, that's why the crime.
Good enough to do jail time for.
I would do jail time for cheese. I love cheese.
That would be very popular as you're in your jail cell and the conversation erupts of what you got, what got you into jail, and you go, "Well, I stole some cheese, so I'm in here. I'm doing hard time because I stole some cheese."
That is fascinating to
me. Yes, it is. I love dairy related crime.
I love
you?
Cheese. Can I just tell you, like, that is my favorite thing in all the land.
It's unfair to get into this now because we don't have a lot of time. I just want to make mention of it. I stayed up last night until 12:45 watching Game 5 of the World Series.
How about that?
An amazing game. 13-12 in 10 innings.
It was tied so many times.
Yeah, it was every time you thought a team was out of it, they came back. They'd score two or three or four runs and come back. It was amazing.
Justin Turner also got a haircut and a beard trim. I don't know if you noticed, but he did.
A very subtle one. Nothing dramatic. Yes, he still did. Now, what I want to bring up is an ugly part of the game of baseball, of sports. The other night, during one of the games, game three, one of the players on the Houston Astros, their first baseman, Yuli Gurriel, hits a home run off of Yu Darvish, who pitches for the Dodgers. Yu Darvish is of his descent is Middle Eastern and Asian. He's Japanese and Iranian, right? So he throws the pitch. Yuli Gurriel hits a home run. He circles the bases and he gets in the dugout and he makes a horrible racial slur. He puts his fingers to his eyes, the slant eyes slur, it's being called in the papers.
Why would he do that? How old is this kid?
He's in his 20s.
Okay, come on.
Right. Old enough to certainly know that what you're doing is offensive, right? So they show it on TV, and there's a lot of people online saying, well, you can't be doing stuff like that, which I totally agree with. So the commissioner of baseball decides he's going to sit down with him or speak to him anyway, and also speak to Yu Darvish and get his thoughts on it. Now, Yu Darvish handles it as gentlemanly as possible, saying, look, the heat of the moment, I get it. Whatever he did, he did. Let's let it go. You know, the commissioner decides he's going to suspend him. But he makes the decision that he's not going to suspend him now during the World Series, but toward next season. He's going to take five games off of him next season without pay. And he says he's doing it that way so that he feels it financially. I guess according to the players' agreement, you can't take any money that's been given to you for making the World Series. So he says, if I wait till next season, he's going to feel it a little more in his pocketbook. It'll cost him some money. I don't agree with that. I say you got to suspend the guy immediately.
As I was watching the game, and excuse me, he came up to bat. I said that to Jimmy Mack. That was the first thing I said. Is
suspend
wait, I
now.
Thought he was out for five games.
Right.
And Jim explained that it's going to be at the start of the season. And I said, well, that's
right.
That's too late.
Right. Do it now.
Yeah.
Make it more impactful. They need him during the World Series, but. If you want to make a stand here,
yeah.
You got to say, look, you just did this. We're punishing you now. Now,
do they
the
have
worst
a chance?
Part,
does Houston have a chance without him?
Yeah, they still have a chance.
He's a
pretty good player. But here's the most disturbing. Well, that's disturbing. Everything I just told you is disturbing. But then the people of Houston, of course, are following this because they don't want to lose their first baseman for the rest of the World Series. And the decision is made just prior to the next game that the suspension won't be served until next season. So he comes up to bat in Houston to thunderous applause. They just give him an insane ovation, which to me is just as bad because it's almost their way of saying all is forgiven. What you did is fine and it's not fine.
I don't think all is forgiven. They're just happy he's playing. And I'm kind of going
why
for...
Why cheer for him then?
Because he's a good player, and Houston needs something good for once. They need a win here. They've had a lot of problems.
It made me... I did not want the Dodgers to win the World Series because they took the Cubs out. So I'm like, well, then they shouldn't experience joy. I hope Houston wins. But as soon as this happened, I traded allegiance. Now I want the Dodgers to win.
What was the guy who was on the Cubs who had some domestic violence that I can never remember his name?
Which guy?
He was a pitcher. He was on the Cubs. He is no longer there.
Oh, their relief pitcher last
year.
Yeah. Aroldis Chapman.
Okay. Yeah. Well, people still cheered for him for coming up.
Now, you know me. You know I did not. I didn't want him on the team, and I
so
never
so were you mad at
him.
Cubs fans for cheering for the it's their player at that point?
But it didn't. The timeline didn't play out this way. Like, he did it one day, the suspension is thrown his way, and then all of a sudden he shows up to thunderous applause. I think that was a horrible thing for the people
of
Houston
to do.
They're
supposed to boo him?
Not
they want
boo
their
him,
team to win.
Like with Chapman, whenever he came into a game, no reaction from me at all. I wouldn't do it positive. I wouldn't do it
but
negative.
But what about the crowds at Wrigley?
He got some nice applause more times than not. But he wasn't one day removed
right.
from the event.
It is the swiftness of it. And that's why I feel he should have been suspended for the five games right
immediately.
Here. Like if they're playing three more games than two when the season starts.
Right.
The waiting to give the punishment to me is not right. But I can't criticize any Houston fans for applauding
it
their
was very
teammate.
Hard to watch. I watched it going, oh, why are you you're almost giving this
because they want to win.
I know that they want to win, but something's, this is coming from me, by the way, some things are more important than winning.
So you expected the whole stadium to be quiet?
I didn't expect the whole stadium to be quiet, but I certainly didn't expect the whole stadium to give him a loud, rousing ovation, as if
well,
to say all is forgiven.
Bill, you know, you told me about the story, so I didn't know, but he came out and was super apologetic, right?
I think he was apologetic because somebody got to him and said, you need to be apologetic.
Okay, but he was super apologetic.
Yeah.
Okay, so could you not see the applause as the fans saying, you know, we get that?
I didn't see it that way.
Right.
I did not see it that way. I'm sure that some people could have, and they've gone out of their way, the people over at Fox, to try to paint him in a good light and talk about how remorseful he is. They've spent a lot of time on that the last day or two, talking about how this really changed him and it woke him up, but a little too late for me. I just thought it was a horrible, horrible thing to do. You know, they're always talking about what can we do to get more kids to watch baseball? Well, if more kids were watching baseball, they would have seen a horrible ethnic slur.
And it's so babyish. I'm just shocked at the babiness of his actions.
I know.
Really?
And this is a guy, who, you know, he came over from Cuba. He's an immigrant. He comes to a new country as well. What are you thinking? Why in the world would you do that on such a grand stage, or on any stage, not just because it's the World Series, but ever? Let's say it's a game that next to nobody was watching. You still don't do something like
that. Adults don't act like that.
You shouldn't.
And someone said, I heard the suspension is next year is to not to punish the other Astro players that work so hard to get into the series. And there is some truth to that.
I know that that makes sense. I understand that makes sense, but if I was the commissioner of baseball, those five games happen immediately, not next season when all is forgiven and forgotten, you know?
Pretty incredible game, though. Last
yeah.
Night.
Oh, yeah. That part, yeah. All right. A break, some news, more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Here is a bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
All right. So how many documents? I was just thinking of this. Hello, it's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. There were 200,000 documents, 20,000 documents.
An amazing number of documents. This is 54 years ago. Some were released just this past week. Many were not. Although President Trump says that at some point he wants all the documents released. That did not happen last week, as we thought it might have.
But he wanted to go through them and make sure there was nothing that was going to shock the country. And honestly, I don't know what can shock the country, but we have an expert on the line. Dr. Werner Spitz is with us right now, forensic pathologist in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. And Dr. Spitz, how are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you very much.
Now, you have served as an expert or consultant in a bunch of high-profile criminal cases. God, I can't talk today. O.J. Simpson, Casey Anthony, JonBenet Ramsey. And you were also on the committee that examined President John F. Kennedy after his assassination in November of 1963.
I looked at not the body. I did not do the autopsy, and I did really not even see the president at any time. But what I did do is review all the documents that were collected by maybe 10 years later, and I started reviewing things when I came back from Germany on the 23rd of November. I was actually out of New York about 100 miles at the time that he was shot. And I reviewed documents and the autopsy report and amazing photographs. And you talk about documents which would shock the country. Well, if you release those pictures, you would shock the country.
Why, Dr. Spitz, why do you say that? What is it about them that would shock us, do you think? Just how graphic
they
are?
Shock me.
No.
They would not shock me because that's all I do in my time, in my professional life. But they would certainly shock people who would not necessarily like to see the inside of a human being.
Yeah. So
yeah,
it would shock
graphic.
Us. It's because it's too graphic, right? Is that why it would shock us?
It is just amazing because when I saw the pictures and in Washington, when I was asked to come down to the archives of the United States in Washington, and they portrayed these pictures, they projected them on the wall by a 9x12 wall, and the pictures were such that I could see every pore in his skin.
Yeah.
There are some things we shouldn't witness, and I believe these pictures could be one of them. There have been so many conspiracies bandied about over the years. Some people truly believe them. What are your thoughts? You're the one who examined the evidence. What are your thoughts on this?
No, I don't think there was a conspiracy where two people or more shot him. I believe there may have been a conspiracy, and I'm not an expert in that, where maybe a foreign government was involved in the shooting. That I don't know. But I do know that he was not shot from the front and from the back or the side. He was shot twice, consistent with having been fired from the sixth floor of the Texas Book Depository in Dallas. And that was done by one person. That's my opinion.
And that's Lee Harvey Oswald.
That's Lee Harvey Oswald.
But Dr. Spitz, as you've pondered this, as you've thought about this for 54 years now, have you thought that there are some things that just don't sit right with you? Is there anything about this that when you look back, you say to yourself, that just doesn't quite add up?
No, there really is not. I think that things could have been performed such that there wouldn't be all this talk about conspiracy theories at the present time. Dr. Earl Rose would have been allowed to do the autopsy and the FBI wouldn't have got into removing the body from Dallas to Bethesda, Maryland, for the autopsy to be conducted there at the Naval Hospital. If that would have been done much more professionally, where Dr. Rose would have done the autopsy and not as it happened, then we would have been one step ahead in that we wouldn't today be talking about it.
Right.
All right, so you think, in your opinion, that Lee Harvey Oswald was the only shooter. How many shots do you think came from Lee Harvey Oswald?
Two.
Two shots.
Well, maybe, I don't know, there may be three. But two shots struck him. One in the back of the right shoulder, that went through the neck from back to front, came out in the neck because he was hunched over, and that wound in the neck was not an entrance but an exit wound. And then in the second shot that killed him, fired into the, or struck him in the back of the head, approximately at the cowlick.
Now, haven't people said that, unfortunately, some of the contents of the former president's head went backwards, that that meant that a bullet came from the front?
No. The reason that his body went back is because after the first shot, it took a few seconds for the driver to realize that they were being shot at, because he was in an open vehicle.
Right.
He was in a convertible vehicle. So we could see everything that the president did by way of movement. You say backwards? Yes, because the driver realized they were being fired at and put his foot all the way down on the accelerator. And of course, the president, who was sitting in the back seat, flew backwards.
Right.
Dr. Spitz, have there been any advances in what you do over the past half century where you would examine things a little bit differently now as opposed to what happened back in 1963?
No, that's the irony of the case, where the injury in the front of the neck was misinterpreted. It was interpreted as an entrance wound, which immediately opened the door to a conspiracy where he would be shot from the front and the back. He was not shot from the front. He was shot only from the back. The shot in the back of the right shoulder is from the back, and the shot in the head is from the back also.
And I don't know if this is in your grade to comment on, but many people have said in the past that Lee Harvey Oswald was strictly not a good enough marksman to have made that shot, that crucial shot to the neck. Can you comment on that?
No, because, look, marksman may miss occasionally. A marksman may not miss occasionally. And so to base an opinion such as in this case where the president lies dead after being shot, mm-hmm. because it's unlikely that this marksman would not have succeeded. If that had been the case, we also wouldn't be talking about it anymore. But because he did succeed, all theories are open for discussion.
Right.
But did that really happen? No, it didn't happen. Mm. It's only a suggestion, and it's only somebody's opinion that, well, he might not have been hit because he wasn't a good marksman. Who knows how good a marksman he was?
Right.
Dr. Werner Spitz on the line with us. He's a practicing forensic pathologist in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. You'd mentioned that the autopsy perhaps was botched. What happens in a case nowadays if somebody does the wrong thing for an autopsy? Can it be revisited?
No, it cannot be. It cannot be. If they exhumed the body, for example, I mean, I'm not suggesting that anybody should do that. But if, for some unknown reason, the body were exhumed, you may find little tiny pieces of lead inside the neck area. And there are little tiny pieces of lead that were squeezed out from the so-called pristine bullet, which was never pristine. It was not pristine because it was squeezed on one side and totally pristine on the other side. But the media chose to show the picture of the side that was not squeezed, and the bullet looks pristine. And now there are theories that, well, a pristine bullet would never have been going through Kennedy and then through
the
governor of Texas in front,
yeah.
and blown up a large section of his chest, and then gone over his left leg, his left thigh, and then landed somewhere. This bullet was, I held it in my hand when I went to Washington.
You did.
I could ask the people who invited me there, I could ask them for just about anything that related to the assassination, and they would have let me have it. So when I asked for the bullet, I got the bullet. And the bullet was not pristine on one side and totally pristine on the other. There's no question about it.
So, Dr. Spitz, what do you think will happen and what should happen and what will happen in terms of the rest of the documents and pictures? Do you think they will release them eventually or soon, or do you think that they just shouldn't? What do you think?
Well, these are probably all kinds of documents that were generated in the investigation that followed, but the facts of the case were available by viewing the Zapruder film, by talking to the people on scene at the time, the officers who heard all kinds of shots, and they thought that maybe there's shooting all over the place. No, some of these sounds, at least, were echoes and resonance. And, people heard shots when cars generated sounds that sounded like shots were being fired.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happened on that day, on that very sad day, was documented by those who investigated the scene and the circumstantial evidence that existed at that time. What occurred subsequently was, well, did this outfit or this individual order this assassination or things of that nature? But I can tell you that from the autopsy and from the clothes and from the that I examined, I looked at, and from all that, and then, of course, the next day when Oswald was assassinated or was killed, all these things gave the basics of this investigation, and that indicates one shooter and no other conspiracy theories are valid based on what happened on that day.
So, Doctor, you are still practicing forensic pathology. What are you working on now?
I am doing another edition of my textbook that I did some years ago and was extremely that book came out in 1972 and is still going strong. But this book that I'm doing now is a fifth edition, and I think will be a lot more substantial in contents.
Do you think about the Kennedy assassination every day? Because I think if I was as close to it as you were, I would. Do you think about it every single day?
Well, I don't know if every single day, but I think about it quite often because I also teach forensic pathology. And when the chapter on gunshot wounds comes up, this is foremost in my discussions.
I would imagine. Dr. Spitz, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
It's Dr. Werner Spitz, pathologist who worked on the Kennedy assassination case. How about that?
And is like 90 years old and is still
working.
Practicing today. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, it is. All right, a quick break and then more show. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN. All right, tomorrow is Halloween, as you know, so the show will reflect that. We have a couple of guests, Halloween-based Ursula Bielski, who's been with us in the past. She runs Chicago Hauntings Ghost Tour. Boop. She knows, don't do that, Wendy. She knows all the scariest places in Chicago. And then what would Halloween be without a visit from one of our favorite guests of all time? Sven Gulli will also be with us. That takes place on tomorrow's show.
There's some cemetery or something that somebody posted on Facebook that there was a huge line trying to get into yesterday. It was a beautiful day. Is it Bachelor's Grove?
Oh, yeah, the one out southwest.
Yeah.
That's one of the...
A huge line of cars wanting to go through it.
I'm not sure why you would do it. This was yesterday?
Well, it was the last weekend before Halloween.
Oh, I guess so.
The big Halloween parties were happening over the weekend.
Halloween?
Did you do anything?
No. I used to drive through Bachelor's Grove. Friends and I would drive through on Halloween. And there, a lot of police presence
on
Halloween.
Imagine.
All right. In a little bit, some news. And then after the news, Eric Zorn. So stick around. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. The greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn.
We sing the praises of Zorn.
Eric Zorn is here. He writes for the Chicago Tribune, as you know. And Wendy, you just suggested that he possibly give you a haircut for reasons I don't fully right. understand.
We need more layers.
What's that all about?
We great fathers are great at giving haircuts.
Is that true?
To boys. Absolutely.
Did you give your son a haircut when he was growing up? Your son?
Pretty much no.
No?
I didn't. My dad used to give me haircuts.
That was a standard that everybody's dad.
Because everybody
dad
had
give...
the clippers and would just, yeah, it was yeah. the same cut. I'll take a number five.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, we take our kids to this place called Snippets.
Oh, yeah, I know what that is.
You know that?
Or Whippersnippers.
And you, get
or...
to, you have to sit in a little chair.
It's cool.
I mean, a little car that was like a chair. And, and they would play videos to distract you. And they had really talented like entertainers. I don't know how great they were at cutting hair, but they were really good at distracting kids. Because haircuts can be traumatic for little kids. So
when your
and
dad,
big kids.
And big kids. When your dad would give you a haircut, was it the same thing where you would sit on like a... some sort of a stool-type chair up on the table. They would cover the table. Was that standard for you as well?
Yes, and he would put a big bed sheet around
yeah,
me
yeah,
and,
yeah.
and pin it to my neck, and then, yep. and then they would sweep up afterwards.
Why couldn't the Flo-Bee have been invented then?
Were you in the crew cut mode then?
No, I never had a crew cut.
I had one for a while.
Did you?
You did? Yeah. You look like you'd have a crew cut.
I had one for several years.
He could rock a crew cut, I think.
And almost joined the Navy. But I already had the haircut, so I went, I should just join.
I did shave my head when my wife was going through chemo.
Really?
So that was 20 years ago.
I love when people do that.
I do, too.
So
it shows good unity.
It really didn't, you know, because I look like Aryan youth. I look like I was joining like a skinhead movement. It didn't really work for me, but I did keep it. So.
What a nice gesture. That's so nice of you
to
do.
I'm a nice
You're
guy,
a nice man.
Despite what they say.
No, you are a very nice man.
True, no.
Eric, from time to time we talk about tweets. You usually have on a monthly basis the funniest tweets of the month, but now you have a special edition of these. These are for Halloween, right?
These are for Halloween. These are the top 10 Halloween tweets of all time.
Of forever?
Forever. Right. Yeah. Number one, the best Halloween costume is Amelia Earhart. All you have to do is not show up to the party.
That's very
I'm
funny.
Done, sir, then.
One time I wore my brother's T-shirt, and my dad asked me if I was dressing up as his favorite child for Halloween. That was from Conan O'Brien. I'll put these online.
Yeah, along with who you can attribute them to.
What is going on with my phone?
And Eric is now going to break into song.
We are required to have a little musical mobile that goes around Eric's head.
Keeps him interested.
Yes.
Yep.
Kind of like a baby's
Look at
crib.
The duckies, Eric. Look at the duckies.
I can't even mute this thing.
That's all right.
Gosh.
We'll just edit this out.
You know what that was? I have this thing called Tile that if you touch the Tile button on your phone, it finds your keys and vice versa.
Yeah.
If you touch the button on your keys, it'll find your phone. Well, I must have just shifted uncomfortably in my chair here because I'm feeling so uncomfortable.
Oh.
And that must have set that off. And you can't stop it until you...
Are you more uncomfortable now?
Yeah, I am. But we've given a lesson, another tech lesson, because you're tech-friendly... audience people. Number three, I don't care that he's a four-year-old child. His pirate costume is historically inaccurate garbage, and he needed to be told. This Halloween, I'm going to dress up as me from last Halloween when I dressed up as future me.
Oh, I like that.
That's good.
You like that? For your Halloween party, I'm going as a guy not going. If you come to my house this Halloween, you're getting Tums.
What?
Tums.
Why do you point to me? Tums.
Because you haven't bought your Halloween candy yet.
I bought two bags, but we've kind of eaten them.
It's not enough. After a certain age, the only Halloween costume you feel like wearing is Brian Wilson's bathrobe. Cashier, look at all this candy. You're going to have a lot of happy kids this Halloween. Me, it's Halloween?
Oh, good. Good.
My daughter wants to be something scary for Halloween this year, so she's going to carry a school fundraising packet to every dorm. And the last one is the one that I'm doing this too. I'm probably just going to be sexy dad for Halloween again this year.
Mm-hmm. That's your tweet?
No, it's not mine.
No.
But I relate to it. So.
A lot of these are based on the theme that some of us don't really want to dress up very much. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
When's the last time either of you dressed up for Halloween? It's been a very long time for me.
I think high school.
Can I tell you that 48% of American adults dress up for Halloween this
they
year?
They do?
48%.
I wouldn't have guessed anywhere near that high.
The three of us are the only ones who don't.
It seems like it sometimes, doesn't it?
It has become very, very popular over the last decade. The National Retail Federation says we spend $9 billion this year. We're spending it on Halloween, whether it be decorations, candy, or costumes, things of that nature.
See, and if you get invited to anything Halloween-related, any kind of Halloween
I'm
parties,
sick.
And you don't, but if you don't dress up, you're ridiculed when
That's
you get there.
That's why I don't go.
Yeah, it's best not to.
Well, that's
go
why
there,
you
right?
have a line like "I'm going as me from last year." When
right.
I dressed up as Future Me.
Right. You need something like that.
Yeah. You need a way out. Well, it's you know, Halloween has become this kind of this excuse for adults. They've taken this child's holiday and turned it into something we get an excuse to get drunk and be silly. So.
And we've noticed.
I don't need a costume for that.
Right. It's a daily basis. Mm-hmm. We've noticed that now Halloween is also, whereas you used to try to find a costume, now you have to find a costume that has the word sexy or naughty attached to it.
Or slutty, yeah.
Yeah.
20% of costumes are made as the result of Pinterest.
Really?
No, I'm serious.
I love Pinterest. Yeah. I'm not kidding you.
16% of people dress up their pets on Halloween.
Not me.
Yeah.
And, but just to be bold enough to say, I'm not just a French fry, I'm a sexy French fry. Nobody's a sexy French fry. There's no such thing as a sexy French fry. Onion ring, yes, but not French fry.
Someone suggested the best Halloween costume this year would be to go as Jared Kushner in a war zone. Do you remember that when he was wearing that little vest and he was hanging around all the soldiers and he looked like just the class dweeb?
I know.
That would have been a great costume to wear. And did you hear, have anybody heard about any great costumes that people are wearing?
Not yet.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders would be a terrific costume, you know.
A lot of people are going. I've seen a lot of kids dressed as Elle from Stranger Things on Facebook. Because really, all you need is a pink dress, short hair, and tube socks from the 70s with green and yellow stripes at the top.
That's how easy it is.
Have you guys seen the David S. Pumpkins?
Yes.
Outfits?
Yes.
Those are pretty
funny.
Good.
There's a bunch of those.
I don't. You still enjoyed it? Did you watch it this weekend?
Yeah, they did an animated special at 10:30 on Saturday. Which I can't figure out who it's for because it seemed like something that was for kids, but it was on a 10:30 on a Saturday night. So, and parts of it, I have to be honest, there were a couple of pretty funny lines in there. It wasn't hysterical, but it was easy to watch.
You watch that instead of the World Series?
No, I kept switching back and forth. I kept going back and forth.
Picture in picture?
Yeah, I did some picture in picture.
I do that with the World Series sometimes.
Do you?
Because you don't have to really listen to them talk. You can watch the
Just
game.
Go to the
Baseball
action.
Unfolds rather slowly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially last night's game.
Yeah.
But that was an amazing game.
Let's take a quick break, and then more of Eric Zorn, the greatest father in all the land. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
$10.
$5.
$8 and I'll do it.
Fine.
Help! I've escaped from Kevin Spacey's basement. Help me!
Oh, it's funny you bring up Kevin Spacey, Stewie, because Kevin Spacey is in a little bit of a stew himself, isn't he, Eric?
Wow, is that a good transition? He
really
is a radio.
Good.
That's a radio professional right there.
Thank you.
This was featured on The Family Guy
years ago.
God. Yeah, I'm trying to find out if we have a date for it. I'll look for that. But it seems, because remember, Bill, you had said something that Bill Cosby's jokes were featured in 30 Rock.
And Kevin Spacey is made fun of. Did you ever see the show Difficult People? It's on Hulu.
No.
It's really funny. A guy named Billy Eichner from Northwestern has this show where he and an actress are just mean to people for a half an hour.
Oh, I've seen. He runs
really
around
funny.
The streets and
oh, no, that's
people.
Billy on the street. Same guy,
same
but
guy.
A different show.
Okay.
But this is a sitcom about an actor and an actress. And he does at least one Kevin Spacey joke per episode. And it's always kind of alluding to what we just found out about Kevin, or alleged to have found out about
alleged,
Kevin Spacey.
Alleged to find out about it.
Yeah.
Very disappointing, of course, to hear. I'm a big fan of House of Cards and Kevin Spacey's work in general. It has that menace to it.
Yeah.
But allegations for people who haven't been following this, an actor, Anthony Rapp is
Anthony
his name?
Anthony Rapp, yeah.
Says that about must have been 30 years ago, right?
Yeah, he was 14 at the time.
He was 14. They were acting in Broadway. He was acting in Broadway in a play with Kevin Spacey, and that after hours, they went back to Kevin Spacey's apartment and had too much to drink. And then he alleges that Kevin Spacey forced himself on Anthony Rapp, and he has been suppressing this or not talking about it for all these years. And he decided in the Me Too spirit of the hashtag Me Too and all the stuff that's coming out now, he was going to talk about this. Kevin Spacey came out with a statement saying that he doesn't remember this particular incident.
He apologized
for it, and he sort of intimates that this would not have been out of character for him. And at this, and in the course of this statement he released, he also said that he is living as a gay man. He said, basically, I've had sex with men, sex with women, but I now choose to live as a gay man. And people in the gay community are fairly upset about this because it's, he seems to link his own alleged predatory behavior with being gay.
Right.
And this is, of course, one of the things that is one of the slams against gay people, which is not true, which is that they have some sort of are extra, more likely to be pedophiles or something like that.
Well, so they're two different things. And because at first I thought this is a time to reveal he's gay because he's like, it was a boy or a man. I like men. It was kind of a perfect opportunity to say, I am gay. I don't remember doing it, but it could have happened because I'm attracted to men. The 14-year-old is what's so troublesome.
Well, that's what makes it really bad. I'm not sure. I don't know what their various power roles were back then. I don't think he was the guy's boss or anything like that. But the fact that he was 14 really makes it a terrible thing. The fact that it was 30 years ago, how do we feel about that? I mean, Dennis Hastert's crimes were with boys about that age. And those were 40 years ago. And we still take those very seriously. It seems to me that this is probably the kind of thing that is likely to spell the end of his acting career.
How about that? Wouldn't that be something?
Can I just tell you that the Daily Mail has released some information? Kevin Spacey is named as the Hollywood star accused of assaulting a TV news anchor's loved one years ago. Heather Unruh said the Weinstein scandal gave her courage to accuse Spacey. She said, I was a Kevin Spacey fan until he assaulted a loved one. She has refused to name the relative, but she wants Spacey investigated. On October 13th, she said that.
Well, Mark Halperin's career. Now, this is ABC
Game Change.
He's the former ABC political director. He was a regular on Morning Joe.
The circus he's had ties to.
The circus. Not Barnum and Bailey Circus, but
no,
the TV show.
Showtime.
The Showtime show, The Circus. His career seems to be over. HBO yanked a deal with him. His publisher yanked a deal with him. NBC, I think just this morning, formally severed ties with him.
And Showtime.
These are over workplace allegations. Pretty skeezy ones too, from when he was at ABC. So these aren't particularly recent. The Kevin Spacey, I don't know how old this accusation you're talking about here is, but the
30 plus years.
But the one with Anthony Rapp is 30 years. It's more than 30 years. But even still, I think these are the kinds of things that you don't just get over. You don't get a second chance after something like that. And it's too bad because he's a very talented actor, and I really I love the House of Cards franchise, but I can't imagine anything's going to really
rebound from this.
That he will. I don't know that you do from an accusation
think so.
Like that.
And Bill, I brought up the Family Guy thing. It seems like it was kind of a running joke. Same thing with Cosby. So does this mean more things are going to surface? Is the shoe just
with
start?
Kevin Spacey,
yeah.
You have to wonder, right? Yeah, isn't that scary?
Who do we know that? I mean, aren't you worried like who the next person is that we're going to find out stuff on?
I am. Now, I had a conversation with a friend of mine over the weekend who's not in the entertainment industry at all. And he said, I know of a couple instances for what I do for a living where people with power, people higher up, have taken advantage of women and men below them. He said, and I was talking to a friend of mine who told a similar story about his industry. He said, so even though this is, it's like it's witch hunt season, and rightfully so in show business, he said, I bet this is something, it's the beginning of something with all industries where they take a look at themselves and they say it's too easy for people to take advantage of other people.
I basically think that's a great thing, because I think what is going to help put a stop to this is
exposing it.
Well, it's going to be the fact that it as of now, the risk is much, much higher.
Sure.
Yep.
The people who think that, in the office will be, I can get away with this because I'm powerful, because she'll never say anything or he'll never say anything. One of the things that came up for me over the weekend, I wrote a column about, talking about this workplace situation, mostly, and also social, between men with power and women of lesser stature, and talking about how men should be treating women, and also colleagues in the workplace, too. And it focused completely on male-female relationships. And my basic thrust was that, the golden rule is do unto others as you should want. And I wanted to sort of expand that and say, well, you should treat women the way you would want another man to treat your sister
or your daughter or your wife or your mother.
Right.
Have that kind of circular awareness of what's going on here. But there are so many people who feel like they can get away with this. But as the risks go up, that, you know, if someone who is in a position of say a Mark Halper now, who has been pushing these boundaries or crossing these lines, has to pull back. Now knows that, look, I mean, if you look at what happens, and this is why it's such an object lesson. Look at Mark Halperin 2 weeks ago was flying high. I mean, sure. He writes these best-selling books. They turned into movies, right? Game Changers turned into a movie. He's a panelist on the Real Popular Morning Show. He's got an HBO
all over the place.
Show. All over the place. And it's all gone.
Over a weekend.
Over a very short time. And so people have got to think when they're about ready to, you know, rub themselves against a coworker or something that you know, their reputation, their career.
Right.
In some cases, I don't know about Halper. I don't think he was married, but your marriage can fall apart. Weinstein's marriage fell apart.
Yeah. Fast.
You know, all these things can, in your family, everything can, you can lose everything when you do this kind of stuff. And I think that's basically a good thing. That should be
But didn't we all know that before? Why
no,
did
I don't
it take?
I don't think we did. I don't think
really.
There was...
To some extent, yes, but I'm sure there were plenty of people who thought they were immune to it.
I guess
I can get around it. Other people couldn't, but I bet
I
could.
Well, I'm thinking, there's a big difference between me and Cosby, right? You say, well, Cosby,
right,
was drugging women and having sex with them. I'm just rubbing myself against them or whatever.
Right.
No, someone's going to take that sound clip out of context. So I know.
Already
I know,
been done.
I know how
Nick DiGilio.
I know how those media people work.
Yep. Right? Eric, thanks so much. Greatly appreciated. It's Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. We'll find out what Steve has next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. We will continue our conversation about any and all things on the stream. Join me and Bill. Join me. Yes, Bill and me. Whatever.